Welcome to Saga Thing, where we're putting the sagas of the Icelanders on trial. I'm John.
And I'm Andy. And if you're listening to this, then you've made it through our two summary episodes of Finnbogi Saga, and you're finally ready for the judgments.
As we usually do, we'll be judging the following categories. Best bloodshed, body count, nicknames, notable witticisms, outlawry, in which we'll exile one figure from Iceland and the sagas forever, thingmen, in which Andy and I will choose one man or woman from the saga cast to join our all-star teams, and then we'll offer our thoughts and final ratings in the final section.
And, you know, I've been looking forward to this judgment section for a while now. This was a really fun saga, and I'm eager to hear what you really think of it. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but I don't know what you think of it.
Well, I guess we already know how you feel.
Well, you know, I don't think it's a secret that I like this saga, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to get a 10 from me.
Oh, I don't think you're going to give it a 10. I mean, I hope not. I'd lose too much respect for you if you did that. I mean, you really? Refused to give a 10 to Gisli's saga. I would hate to see you loosening the purse strings for Finnbogi.
Right. But now I'm tempted, now that you mention it. Before we get going, John, we need to address a few things.
Do we? Like what?
Well, for starters, there's now a special section of our website devoted to saga-related statues and monuments and things like that, landmarks, whatnot. Now, you had asked me to put that together in the Greenlander Saga Judgment section, and some of our loyal listeners have already been kind enough to send us some pictures. We've got some lovely pictures of Thingvellir National Park in winter and a rare sighting of Holgadansk in Solvang, California, of all places. And I just want to say thank you to Martin and Eric for sharing so early on.
Awesome. We'd love to see more pictures of our listeners and at saga-related places, like Solvang, California, apparently, and with any relevant statuary that you happen to stumble upon. I know you mentioned before that there's a statue of Thorfinn Karlsefni somewhere in Philadelphia, and I'm really hoping a listener can snap a picture of that one sometime soon.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. So if you live in Philadelphia or you're planning a trip to Philly, it's in Fairmount Park on Kelly Drive. You can go look it up. And I know we've got listeners all over the world who probably have access to all kinds of cool saga-related stuff that we will never get to see. So please get those cameras out and snap a selfie for us.
And you can send your pictures to us through Facebook, where we're Saga Thing Podcast, or at Saga Thing Pod on Twitter, or via email at sagathingpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. Now, there's one more thing we should address before jumping into the Finnbogi judgments.
You tell me what it is, I'll address it.
All right. Well, it has to do with our pronunciation of things.
Oh, that, yeah. What can I say? We're American scholars who focus on Old Norse literature. We're not really trained in modern Icelandic.
That's true. That said, I'm not going to deny that sometimes we're a little bit clumsy when it comes to pronouncing our Icelandic names and place names and such. But, you know, we do our best. If I were an Icelander, I would probably cringe at most of what we say.
Oh, go ahead and cringe, Icelanders. We're used to it.
Yeah. But there is a distinction to be made. When John and I studied Old Norse, there wasn't really a lot of emphasis on pronunciation, though we did make an effort to understand the language on its own terms, at least according to the books that we were using.
Right. And that means that we learned the pronunciation for Old Norse Icelandic and not for modern Icelandic. So there are going to be, and there have been, a lot of occasions in this podcast where we're using an older pronunciation of a name or a place or a word. And Finnbogi is a good example of this.
That's right. And one of our most loyal listeners, Patricia, recently pointed out on Facebook that we were destroying his name, sadly. She did her best to describe how it should be pronounced, but her description didn't quite click with me. So I had to search it out online looking for a good pronunciation. And conveniently, I don't know if you know this, the popular American cartoon Phineas and Ferb is all over the internet in a variety of languages.
Why is that convenient?
It's convenient because in Iceland, Phineas and Ferb are known as Finnbogi and Felix.
Oh, I see. Only it's not really Finnbogi, right?
No. Patricia's exactly right. We are not pronouncing Finnbogi according to modern Icelandic phonology. Now, if I heard it right on the YouTube video I watched, the name is actually pronounced something like Finnboy.
Right. Now, we tend to do one of two things depending on what slips out. We either use an anglicized version of the name, or when we think of it, we use the Old Norse pronunciation.
Yeah, or something close to it. Now, I know when I say Finnbogi, I'm putting too much emphasis on the O in the second syllable, but I would say that the hard G that I'm using in Finnbogi is much closer to the Old Norse than the soft Y that you find in the modern Icelandic.
Right. It's just going to be a part of the podcast. And of course, Andy and I both have our personal regional accents to deal with as well. I know I've been busted on the show before for letting a little too much of my Brooklyn Queens accent slip into my character voices.
Hey, and I'd like to think that I don't have an accent at all, so I'm going to go ahead and apologize for not adding anything to the mix.
Well.
Now, speaking of modern Iceland, he said, forcing a segue, I hope that all of you Saga fans out there saw my post on Facebook and Twitter about the upcoming stage show, Icelandic Sagas, The Greatest Hits.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I went to their webpage. It looks like a lot of fun. If any of our listeners are going to be in Reykjavik, you can check out their site at IcelandicSagas.com.
Yeah, that's a pretty straightforward name. Where'd that come from?
I know. I can't believe it was available. I'm really impressed
that
they got it.
IcelandicSagas.com.
Yeah. The show has that. A great tagline. Find out what tossing a pair of blue pants into a Viking's face really meant. I really wish we could go and see this.
Well, you know, Olafur Eielson, who's in the play, actually invited us. So if you can pull together the money and I can pull together the money, then we're certainly welcome, I know. The play starts on May 4th in the Harpa Concert Hall in Reykjavik. So go and see it if you can.
Well, I don't know about this summer, but I'm interested.
Well, you know, they're planning on at least a 2-year run. So if all goes according to plan, I'm going to be taking students from Kent State to Iceland for a trip in the summer of 2017. So why don't you join us? We can all go together.
I'm not actually a student at Kent, but I might tag along. So it sounds like a plan.
Invited speaker.
It's a very tentative plan. Now, if we don't have any more business, I know we've got a lot to cover today. So
yes, we do. Are you ready to cover this?
Well, I'm the one who's trying to make the transition. I'd say I'm more than ready.
I'm ready too. So let's get the show on the road.
Best Bloodshed.
Well, it seems like every saga we cover is either light on moments of impressive violence or completely stuffed with them. And fortunately for this category this time around, Finnbogi's saga is one of the latter. This saga is so full of options that we're throwing out a bunch of them. I mean, Andy, there aren't a lot of sagas where an underwater knife fight with a magic bear wouldn't at least be a contender. But we're throwing that one right out. Heck, late in the saga, Finnbogi kills 6 men with nothing but a pile of rocks, and we're saving that one for the witticism section.
I thought that was going to win, actually.
So we've got a lot going on here, and we've tried to pick a good cross-section of the weirdness on display in this text.
Yeah, and this section tends to be a bit longer for sagas with such a great effusion of blood as we see in Finnbogi's saga. But don't worry, faithful listeners. We're going to do our best to make this all a pleasant experience for you. Well, now, as always, each of us has chosen a handful of worthy options. And, John, I think I have one more than you. So if you don't mind, I'll go first.
Go ahead.
All right. So I don't think that these first two that I'm going to give you are going to win, which is why I'm bunching them together.
Two but, now.
But I'd feel terrible if we got...
You're sneaking one in.
Right. It's two for one. And it'll feel like it. I think it would be awful if we got through Best Bloodshed without recognizing Finnbogi's amazing battle skills. So let's start with this. Do you remember the battle between Finnbogi and the Brettings?
I do.
It's actually Finnbogi's first battle in the saga, at least with a sword. He does a lot of wrestling and animal killing before that, but he does really well in these battles. First thing he does is smash a Bretting in the face with a rock, and then he beheads him. And then the second Bretting's pinned to the ground after getting run through. And then the last one, Grim, is nearly cut in two from the shoulder to the waist. And this is an impressive first foray into defending himself against ambushes, which he's going to need to do quite a lot of. And I just want to tack on another one real quick, since it's so similar. And this one is from the ambush where Finnbogi loses his nephew Berg and his dim-witted kinsman Thorkel. Now, I was particularly impressed by the violence of this battle. After Thorkel falls, Berg strikes Cole, the fire tender, you'll remember. He strikes Cole in the chest, which knocks Cole back. And the saga tells us that Cole fell on his back and Finnbogi hit him on the head with a stone so that the skull shattered into small fragments and he died instantly. He then defends himself against Jokul and others. Finnbogi's not messing around in this battle, though. He severely wounds Jokul and almost cuts a man named Vilmund in half. Then Finnbogi is attacked by a large and dangerous man named Thrarin. He manages to hit him in the face with a rock, which knocks him to the ground. And, John, you know what that means. Once a guy's on the ground, Finn Bogey's going to cut him in half.
Right.
So Finn Bogey slices him in two from at the waist, and that's when the saga tells us he was, by then, in a very dangerous mood. Indeed, he was.
Yeah, there's really a pattern here I hadn't really paid attention to of Finn Bogey chopping people in half, isn't there?
He does a lot of it. But he's very strong. It's hard not to when you're so right. strong.
Well, and impressively, he can slice them in half lengthwise or across.
Exactly. He's good at vertical and horizontal strikes.
Very nice.
Now, this is probably one of the more violent and graphic battles that we've seen. And as I go over it again, you know, I wasn't thinking that it could win. But, you know, I think it makes a great candidate for Best Bloodshed.
It's not bad.
It's going to take something special to beat that. So,
well, let me see what I can do for you. My first entry is Finn Bogey's first fight with a bear. Not the underwater knife fight, but the wrestling match. Finn Bogey's staying in Hologaland for the winter early in his travels when a bear begins terrorizing the community there. The men make plans to hunt the bear, but the night before the hunt, Finn Bogey goes out secretly and finds the bear where it's sucking the blood from a dead sheep. Now, that sucking the blood is a weird detail. I get what it means,
yeah, it is.
That the bear is slurping away at the body, but it does kind of sound vampiric. And I honestly can't think of anything more terrifying than a vampire bear.
What if it's a bear with a straw? Is that less threatening?
Suck, suck, suck.
You're right.
So
more of a slurp.
Finn Bogey slaps the straw out of his mouth and yells at the bear. "Stand up, bear," said Finn Bogey, "and attack me. That would be more worthwhile than lying on this sheep's carcass." The bear sat up, looked at him, and then flopped down. Finn Bogey said, "If you think I'm overarmed against you, I'll remedy that." He took off his helmet, laid down his shield, and said, "Stand up now if you dare." The bear stood up, shook his head, and lay down again. "I understand," said Finn Bogey. "You want us to be on equal terms." He threw away his sword and said, "It will be as you wish. Stand up now if you have the sort of heart one would expect, rather than that of the most cowardly of all beasts." The bear stood up, bristled, and became very angry-looking. He leapt at Finn Bogey and raised his paw, intending to strike him with it, but when he reared up, Finn Bogey ran forward under him. They fought for a long time, and most things in their way were uprooted. They trampled a large area, and it ended with Finn Bogey forcing the bear onto his back and breaking asunder his spine. He arranged the body so that things looked as they were when he arrived, took his weapons, and went back to the farm. He was very stiff, and lay down in his bed, pretending he had been asleep.
What a guy.
Now, in the morning, I just want to explain what happens next. In the morning, he accompanies the hunting party, but he lets them find the dead bear themselves before acknowledging that he's responsible. And as we saw in the summary episodes, this act of killing the bear without leaving visible wounds fascinates everyone around him. And Finn Bogey's going to be answering questions about this adventure for a very long time. So I think it's a worthy
Everyone
candidate.
Everyone wants to know.
And it's a fairly it's a obvious Beowulf analog, which has to get at something.
Kind of, yeah. All right, so this next one of mine is a personal favorite.
Is it?
It is. It comes from one of the yokel ambushes. Surprise, surprise.
One of the many.
Yeah. Now, in particular, this is where Jokul and Bersi attack Gunnbjorn, which is one of Finn Bogey's sons, after a wrestling match where Jokul gets beaten. Now, initially, Gunnbjorn is forced to battle Jokul and Bersi on his own, but soon Finn Bogey arrives to save the day. And save the day he does. He pays Bersi back for attacking his son by, decapitating him in somewhat fantastic fashion. The saga says, "He chopped off Bersi's head so suddenly that it landed between the shoulders of one of his farmhands, who immediately fell down unconscious." That's right. Bersi's head landed with enough force to knock that guy out. And the crowd goes wild.
No, wait. Now you read that as the head knocks him out. I read it as he passes out in terror.
No, because it hits him between the shoulder blades.
Right.
Which means he didn't see it. He just got hit by it so hard. The force of it knocked him down, knocked him out. So, yeah, I see Finn Bogey as the kind of a Babe Ruth of the sagas, hitting home runs with every swing.
Calling his shot.
Yeah, he calls his shot. Like, right.
So, John,
I don't know.
Somewhere in Hull, there's a little boy in a hospital bed watching the fight.
Yeah, this one's for you, sick boy.
Bersi's head is for you, little boy. Get better.
All right, now, if that's not a strong candidate for best bloodshed, I don't know what is.
It absolutely is. I'm not sure whether this next one is going to be a winner, but I think it's an important one. And it tells us a little something about the kind of fighter that Finnbogi is, because a pattern begins to develop here where Finnbogi likes to kill, but he likes to kill with a kind of panache, a little bit of style. So this is the story of how Finnbogi kills Alf Oftarkembi, a relative and tax collector for Earl Hawken. Alf and Finnbogi are sharing a camp on a small island on their way to visit the Earl, but unbeknownst to Finnbogi, Alf is planning to rob and murder him. Alf gives Finnbogi the job of lighting the fire. And I'll read just a little bit here. Finnbogi had trouble getting the fire lit and the wood burnt poorly. He put a lot of fuel on and blew on the fire vigorously. Then he heard a whistling sound above him and he flung himself across to the other side of the fire. Alf had come and planned to deal quickly with Finnbogi. He jumped up quickly and ran under Alf's guard. Alf was a very strong man and they struggled for a long time. The fire began to flare up, illuminating the entire cave. At the back of the cave, Finnbogi saw a rock which was sharp as a knife edge on top. Alf wanted to carry him over there, and Finnbogi did not resist. But when they reached the rock, Finnbogi jumped up, and with a powerful jerk, he broke Alf's breastbone across the rock. Alf died there, without honor, as he deserved.
Boy, did he.
That's a good brawl. It's probably not our winner, but it's worth a mention, and it definitely cements Finnbogi's skill in unarmed combat.
Mm-hmm. As if the bear fight didn't do that already. Well. I find it interesting that the bear fight and Alf's fight are so similar, right?
Yeah.
In both cases, we have an individual being kind of broken over a rock. I think in both cases, it's the Blaumother that he lets himself be dragged over again. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of repetition in the saga.
Oh, no, I think it's absolutely a feature of this saga, the repetition of motifs. I mean, how many ambushes does Jokul lay for Finnbogi? None of them ever come to anything, and they all end up with people getting killed.
Yeah.
But he runs it over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I think it's a marker of the quality of the saga that even though it does repetitive motifs, each of them has their own kind of character, and it never really gets old in the way that some other sagas do.
Maybe.
are you tipping your hand a little bit
there? Close to the vest.
All right, well... My next candidate has to do with a Viking named Ralf and Gunnbjorn. We didn't even get to cover this one in the summary episodes. It comes from a brief digression about Finnbogi's son Gunnbjorn, who was given as a foster child to Dalla, the witchy wife of Berg. Dalla took Gunnbjorn back to Norway, and she raised him there. And by the age of 12, Gunnbjorn had his own ship for raiding, which is really remarkable. Well, and he used it, as a good boy that he is, to attack Vikings who are raiding coastlines. Now, one summer, he runs into a Viking named Ralf, and Gunnbjorn and Ralf have quite a history together. Mm-hmm. They don't like each other very much, mainly because Gunnbjorn convinced his foster mother not to marry Ralf. So, Ralf has some issues.
Now, admittedly, that's a pretty good reason to resent him.
It is. Now, Gunnbjorn manages to find Ralf somehow while he's raiding around, and they arrange a meeting near an island and then start fighting as soon as they get there. Now, Gunnbjorn's only 12, but he's Finnbogi's son, which means he handles himself quite well. Ralf eventually gets tired while they're wrestling, and Gunnbjorn suddenly remembers, conveniently, that he's got a knife around his neck, and it's a little knife, not a big knife. And you know what happens next when you find a little knife during a wrestling match? He pulls the little knife out and he cuts off Ralf's head with it. Now, the saga doesn't offer any description here. It actually almost says exactly what I just said. but I have to imagine this is an extremely gory and unpleasant event. Mm. I mean, it's one thing to cut off a guy's head in the heat of battle with a sword. It's quite another to dig in and cut through everything with a small knife like Gunnbjorn does here. Now, I know that is meant to establish the manliness of Gunnbjorn and his quality, but it's actually a disturbing moment for any sensible modern reader. A stark reminder, I think, of just how different our cultures are, and a good opportunity to reflect on maybe why that's a good thing.
Well, that actually works. It's a good one, but it works very nicely to segue into my last candidate, which is one of the classic wandering worker who's secretly an assassin stories. Now, we see a lot of these in the sagas.
Yeah, it's something of a trope. A person with an enemy hires an unknown man to kill the enemy, and usually by showing up at the man's door and asking to be hired as a laborer.
Yeah.
And often this is an outlaw of some
kind. Right, right. Now, we have multiple examples of this happening in Finnbogi. And in fact, the one I want to concentrate on happens right after Finnbogi's killed another would-be assassin. Both men are sent by Jokul Ingimundarson. We've said that there's a lot of repetition. Because, of course, in this saga, there's nothing too low for Jokul to sink to.
Yeah. So you're going for Thorbjorn Sledgehammer, right?
Yeah. Now, obviously, this isn't the guy from Vatnsdala Saga, right? That was Thorolf Sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. So this guy, Thorbjorn, shows up at Finnbogi's door, and he's a big, strong, dark-haired guy with a nasty appearance. But he speaks well, and he claims to have been outlawed by the Ingimundarsons for getting a relative of theirs pregnant.
Which relative, do you know?
No, the saga doesn't say. Which is one of those sort of lack of detail moments that lead you to think that there's something strange about this saga. But the story is plausible. And apparently Finnbogi's heard something about this scandal with the pregnant woman, so he's willing to give Thorbjorn a shot. He sets him to work cutting hay, and it turns out that Thorbjorn is an expert with a scythe. He mows faster than three normal men, and, we're told, works more like a troll than a man.
Well, that seems foreboding, doesn't it? I mean, it's pretty rare for a comparison to a troll to be a compliment.
Yeah, fair enough. Finnbogi decides to test Thorbjorn by pretending to fall asleep. Thorbjorn carries on cutting hay for a while while Finnbogi sleeps. But when he stops to sharpen his scythe, he decides he's not going to get a better chance than this and tries to drive the scythe blade into Finnbogi's stomach.
Now, I found the section that you're talking about, and there's an important point here. Neither man is armed at this moment except for the scythe.
Right. Finnbogi's playing possum, obviously, and he catches the scythe handle as it comes down. There's a brief struggle, but both of these men are tremendously strong, and the handle shatters in their combined grip. So they throw away these pieces, and then it's a wrestling match. And it's a vicious match. Mm-hmm. Right? Finnbogi realizes that he's underestimated Thorbjorn's strength. After a long fight, Finnbogi manages to knock Thorbjorn to the ground and pins him to the earth.
Now, you're making this sound like a WWE wrestling match. I mean, all we need is some bright colored spandex pants and a ring and you know, someone hiding under the ring to jump out.
Maybe a folding chair. It is a wrestling match.
Yeah. Where's Doink the Clown during this event?
It is a wrestling match. I mean, it's probably more of the actual test of strength kind and not the Hulk Hogan kind. But that's what it is, right? Finnbogi.
Right, so he doesn't have to put his hand to his ear and get strength from the crowd as he
right get pumped up. Finnbogi now forces. He's got Thorbjorn some kind of a chokehold, and he forces Thorbjorn to admit that he wasn't really outlawed. That Jokul sent him.
Wait a minute. So what about this pregnant relative that you said sent him into outlawry?
Yeah. No. Apparently that part was actually real. Jokul more or less blackmailed Thorbjorn into killing Finnbogi in exchange for being allowed to marry the Ingimundarson's relative that he's in love with.
Oh, that Jokul. Truly a prince among men, isn't he?
He's the worst in this saga. Anyway, Thorbjorn then begins to struggle and actually begins to force Finnbogi off of him. And Finnbogi's kind of shocked here, right? Because Finnbogi is supposed to be the strongest man there is. He realizes he can't stop Thorbjorn from getting up. So he twists the end of his cloak around Thorbjorn's neck, bites through it to close it, and then snaps his head back and forth until he breaks Thorbjorn's neck.
Oh, it's brutal.
And it's not over yet. Thorbjorn, we're told, quietened down considerably after that.
Well, you know, you would, wouldn't you? It's hard to be noisy after that.
Well, okay, but he's apparently, Thorbjorn is still trying to get back up. So Finnbogi has to try to do something else.
What? How is he still trying to get up? I would think that a broken neck kind of means something different in this saga than what I think it means. Because how is he getting up?
Well, it doesn't say he's succeeding in getting up. He's sort of flopping around at this point. Anyway, Finnbogi now grabs a small work knife he has hung around his neck and has to use that to stab Thorbjorn to death. And I imagine it's fairly slow and messy work using a paring knife, too.
Oh, it's nasty. Like father, like son, huh?
Right, exactly.
So it does say in the text that Finnbogi declared afterward that he had been in doubt how their encounter would turn out and that Thorbjorn had been the greatest of trolls to deal with.
Well, but it's not all bad. I mean, Thorbjorn had got a lot of Finnbogi's haymaking done for him before he was killed, so that's a plus.
That's true.
What do you got?
All right, so, you know, I would rather be done with this section because I think we've got a lot of great candidates for Best Bloodshed, but there is one more scene that we have to cover.
What's that?
Now, I mentioned in the last summary episode that we discussed the death of Finnbogi's sons, Gunnbjorn and Alf. Now, it's not a pleasant scene, so, you know, if you want to, just skip ahead about 2 minutes, and I should be done with it by then, but here we go. So, this happened shortly after Finnbogi and Ronhild moved to Borg, and it's before the whole Jokul sequence begins. The saga tells us that there was a man in the district by the name of Thorvald Molfskegg, which is, it means yucky haybeard or mudbeard. Ha. Sorry, John, I just stole your nickname,
Thunder. Don't steal my thunder here.
You're not the only one that could do it. Anyway, Molfskegg is considered to be an evil person and a shape-changer, which usually means that this person's going to be trouble. Now, the saga goes on to say that nobody likes Molfskegg, and he's an offensive person and very difficult to deal with. So I think you can imagine where this is headed. So Finnbogi's sons Alf and Gunnbjorn, who are 5 and 3 respectively, have a bit of a naughty streak in them, kind of like their father. Now, for some reason, they like to wander over into Molfskegg's farm and tease him. They play pranks, and they like to rile Molfskegg up as much as they can, and the angrier that he gets, the more fun they have. And this is clearly a recipe for disaster. Now, Ronhild tells her sons to stay away from Molfskegg, but they don't listen. Again, they're Finnbogi's sons. So, one day, they come to Molfskegg's house and find the door locked, and the saga tells us that he's inside making tallow from bone marrow. And since they can't get inside themselves, the boys start taunting Molfskegg from outside, calling him a shape-changer and a troll. Now, this apparently pushes Molfskegg too far, and he opens the door and storms out of the house, and I'll just read what the saga says. He took one boy in each hand and dashed them on a rock so that their brains spurted out. Now, again, it's very quick, and it's graphic, and it's kind of disturbing when you start to think about a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old in this way. Now, I don't recall encountering anything quite like that in the sagas. Do you, John?
No. It's kind of a mood killer, I have to say.
It is. And, you know, I hope we don't see anything like that again. But, you know, the world is a cruel place, and there are plenty of Molfskeggs in it. But, you know, fortunately, there are also a few Finnbogies out there as well. Horrifically, Finnbogi was near enough to see all of this happen, which explains his deep depression afterward. He runs over and makes short work of Molfskegg, but the damage is done, and it only gets worse when Ronhild succumbs to her own depression and dies, leaving Finnbogi all alone. So there you have it. I moved through fairly quickly. John, you gonna lighten the mood for us?
Well, my son just turned 4. We went to a water park for his birthday. That was quite. That's a lot of fun.
Sweet.
No scary hay bearded men there.
Yeah, my son is almost 6, and I'm training him to ride a bike now.
There you go. All there good you go. Times. Some happy stories about our sons.
Keeping him out of the neighbor's yard.
There you go. All right. So. I think we've established pretty definitively. I think we've established pretty definitively that one of the major characteristics of this saga is its repetitiveness. Right. We see a lot of overlap in these different episodes. A lot of the same story elements are popping up over and over again. But which one is the one that we think is going to be worth awarding a prize?
Well, not Molfskegg. I'm not inviting him on stage to get the award. No, he's terrible. Yeah, if I have to be honest, I like Bearsea's head a lot.
Yeah, I think that's...
I want to give it to Finnbogi for knocking out a farmer with another man's
I think that's
head
pretty impressive, and certainly not the kind of thing you see in every saga. I can live with that. Bercy's head it is.
Wow, that was easy.
Body count.
So, body count this time was pretty straightforward, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, it actually was. We had to sort out a couple of issues, as we often do with translations and that sort of thing. But once we ran through the count, we ended up with a pretty straightforward number of 54.
That's right. I think when we first consulted with each other, we were just off by 1 or 2 apiece and arrived at 54 pretty easily after some investigation. Mm-hmm. So not much to talk about here.
Yep. And there are a couple of debatable figures, right? I mean, we had to include the Blamother, the demon troll figure, the blue or black man. We decided we were including Ronhild, killed by grief after the death of her sons.
Untimely death.
So Yep, absolutely. So 54 it is.
And
not a lot of controversy this time.
No,
around.
No controversy. I just want to also include, as we do, the animals. We had one bull and two bears. One regular giant big bear, I assume a grizzly of some kind, and a polar bear, mm-hmm. I think. So three animals.
Right. A magical polar bear.
Not really magical.
But, somehow has the power to understand the speech of men.
I just...
And who swims competitively.
That's right. Well, I don't call that magical.
Quite an upstanding figure in the bear community.
I don't really call that magical. I think of that more as a well-trained bear.
Right. But it is one of the sort of defining characteristics of Finnbogi in this saga that he is a repeat Ursa-side.
I'd say he's smarter than the average bear. Wouldn't you, Boo-Boo?
Stab, 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 stab.
Boy, what is the ranger's name? If that poor ranger, how many times he wanted to stab poor Yogi?
Ranger Rick?
Yeah, Ranger Rick ranger probably Rick. Wanted to put a couple knives in Yogi's back over the years. Anyway.
You didn't see nothing, Boo-Boo. You keep quiet or I can come back for you.
You want to talk about body counts, Boo-Boo? You got no idea what I've got in my closet.
I'll leave you in the picnic basket, you little monster.
What do you think you've been eating in that picnic basket after all these years?
Can we find our way back to this? Or
all right, let's move on to our next category. Sorry about that.
Nicknames.
Here we are in nicknames. Now, I've already spoiled one of them, but I think John has a handful of others to entertain you with and delight you with.
I'll do my best. This song is actually a little light on the kind of nicknames we like to see. I mean, there are a few good ones, but not a ton of innovations. Relatively few nicknames are reported overall in the saga. Even when they do appear, they're often names like Hrovin the Short, Bercy the White, Brand the Eager, or Eyjolf the Lame. The sort of names mm-hmm. we see all the time. Eyjolf the Lame is interesting to me because it's a marker of physical disability, but we don't get enough context in this saga to really talk about him. He's only mentioned in passing as a friend of Thorir Finnbogason, who's at the Battle of Melrakkakoll. But we do still get a few figures worth talking about, so I'll just go through those as quickly as I can.
Which is very, very slow, usually.
The first... is Osborne Detias.
You're just going to ignore me?
This is, yes, I choose to. This is Finnbogi's father. Detias means falling beam or drop wood. The name doesn't come with a great deal of explanation, and in fact, there's not much that's clear about this guy. In Landnámabók, he's the son of Eivind and the grandson of Lothan Angle, but in this saga, he's the son of Gunnbjorn and the grandson of Ingjald. His name is, I think, inscrutable is the word. It comes from the word detter, which is an onomatopoetic word meant to sound like something heavy falling on the ground. Detter. He's also described as a large and strong man, so we're left with three possible interpretations of his name. Either he once caused a house beam to fall, probably by doing some damage to the place, or he clumsily dropped something heavy at an embarrassing moment, or he was once knocked down and fell like a beam of wood. I guess that the first one is the most likely.
I would agree.
So we'll move on to his son, Urtherkot. This is, of course, Finnbogi's name from his childhood. It's actually a nickname. The actual translation of the name is Wildcat, and it probably refers to his having been found exposed and abandoned in the wild. Now, there's a lot to say about the components of this name and its significance. For example, Urther, as part of a compound name, can also mean fate-driven, or for that matter, it can also refer to a small pile of rocks. But we can be pretty sure that's not its meaning mm-hmm. here. I'm sticking with Wildcat, particularly since, for me, it evokes a similar sense of an exposed infant scratching and clawing to cling to life, just as Thorkell Scratcher's name does.
Oh, Scratcher.
See, I knew you'd like that. But of course, that's not the only name that this guy gets. He also becomes Finnbogi the Mighty.
Yes.
So he's given two more names. Let's deal with these in order. Finnbogi is technically not a nickname so much as a renaming, but I think I'll count it. The name means Finnbow, as in an archer's bow. Now, part of the reason we started this podcast was to have a platform for opening conversations about the sagas, and we've been really fortunate that some very, very smart people have found their way to our show and are now taking part in our conversations on Facebook and Twitter. Now, our listener, Patricia, has been all over this nickname, and she got me started down the rabbit hole of historical bow making. But ultimately, her explanation for the bow is all we actually need, so I'll just quote her here. Finnbogi means Finnish bow, which are called Finno-Ugric bows in the academic world. They are mostly unique to Finland and use something called reaction wood from the pine tree. They are also unique in that they are a composite two-wood bow. This combination makes for a very, very powerful bow. That seems to cover it, so thank you, Patricia.
That's great. Now, but let's,
it's great having somebody else do the work for us.
Let's be clear. That Finnbogi becomes a name, right? It's not just a nickname. It's a person's name. You have plenty of people, if you use Google, who are named Finnbogi today, not just a nickname, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's a good point. I think it's very likely that the name Finnbogi has less to do with the actual weapon than with the powerful draw associated with it that Patricia mm-hmm. mentions. This is a strong man's name.
Ah, that's interesting.
Which, of course, means that Finnbogi's nickname... Yeah, see? So Finnbogi's nickname of the mighty or the strong is somewhat redundant.
Yeah.
Strongbow the strong or something like that.
Yeah.
But what's important about the nickname is where he gets it. Right? Finnbogi is given his nickname, the strong or the mighty, directly by Emperor John of Byzantium. Right? Arm rings and colorful cloaks are all very nice, but a nickname like that is a mark of distinction that a warrior can carry around for the rest of his life. And it means that his first name comes from Icelandic parents, his second name from a Norwegian ship's captain, and his third name from a Byzantine emperor. Andy, you made the point that Finnbogi's life outside of Iceland has a kind of fairy tale quality to it, and I'd add that his evolving name almost plots the trajectory of his rise to fame.
Interesting.
Now, Thorvald Malthskegi. Now, Andy went and spoiled this one, but I've got to have a beard nickname in the mix whenever possible, so I'm sticking with it anyway. As usual, the nickname, the element skeggy means beard, and moth means bad hay, refuse of hay, or chaff. So moth skeggy translates more or less to chaff beard.
No.
Hardly a compliment to what I can only imagine is some scruffy-looking and unkempt facial hair.
I don't think
hair.
Chaff beard.
No. Not something you'd want to hear about yourself.
No.
And as you mentioned, this word moth is also the origin of the English word for mud.
Yes.
And so mud beard exactly. is also a possibility.
Well, no, I'm imagining the, you know, when you have a pile of hay underneath, you know, once you start kind of taking all the good stuff off, underneath you're going to have the hay that's kind of mixed with the earth and stuff like that. And I think that's what they're referring to mm-hmm. there. And thus the origin of the word mud.
Well, and gets kind of damp and moldy and musty.
Yeah, kind of stinky. It's all kind of congealed together.
In general, unpleasant.
Like that. That's what his beard looks like. Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely
yeah.
image. Nice. No wonder he was grumpy.
Next, we have Dream Finny. Now, this is a pretty straightforward nickname. Drauma translates simply to dream, although with a kind of dream vision or seer meaning. Finny is a son of Thorgeir the Goði, and therefore on his father's side, a cousin of Finnbogi. But as his name suggests, his mother is a Finnish woman. Andy, you might remember from Vatnsdala saga that Scandinavian peoples tended to associate Finns with a kind of psychic otherworldliness.
Yeah, absolutely. She's the...
You might remember that Ingemund actually hires three Finnish dreamwalkers to scout out Iceland before he moves there.
Right.
So Dream Finny is a name that primes us to think of him as another of these type of figures. Right? The text describes him as a wise man and something of a seer. And in fact, his only reported line of dialogue in the saga is a fortune-telling. When Finnbogi the Norwegian mentions staying with Finny on the trip home, Finny replies, "There's little opportunity to entertain you now, but there'll be even less when you return." Sure enough, Finnbogi the Norwegian dies on his trip. So Seer Finny might actually be a more accurate name for him. Thorbjorn Sledgehammer. And once again, I'll start by saying this isn't the warlock from Vatnsdala saga. Some people might remember Thorolf Sledgehammer from that saga. He was the guy who lived in a house with 20 demon cats. Now, as I recall, we put up a poll asking you, the audience, how many of Thorolf's 20 cats you could take down. And if I remember correctly, 4-6 was the winning percentage. People thought they could get through about a third of the cats before they got taken down.
I think that's reasonable. I think that's still my favorite poll that we've done.
That's So this nickname is the same nickname, and as we said last time, the Icelandic sledgehammer was basically a stone club with a wooden handle attached, and it must have been one of the more lethal working tools around a farm. In this case, it's pretty clear from context that the name refers to Thorbjorn's powerful blows. Right? As Finnbogi says, Thorbjorn's the greatest troll strength he ever faced. Berg the Bold, or Berg Rocky. There's actually been no historical agreement on the meaning of this nickname. Most modern readings accept bold, suggesting that Rocky is a form of rakur, straight or bold. But older translations tend to translate the name as dog, since Rocky in Old Norse is indeed a word for dog. And a third option exists. A Rocky is also a ring used to secure ropes in ship's rigging. I'm going to reject that last one, but the other two are an open question. Ultimately, this is one of those nicknames that comes down to which one feels appropriate for Berg. And the problem is that both names sort of fit him.
Yeah.
He's certainly bold, but he's also like a dog in a fight, right? More bark than bite. I suspect that there's actually something of a pun in his name, encompassing Berg's aggressive self-regard and his noisy but sometimes ineffective truculence that doesn't come across in English. The best I can do is to render the pun in English as courageous, with a punny misspelling of C-U-R-A-G-E-O-U-S.
Ugh.
Courageous.
Boo. Boo.
It's the best I can
Boo.
Do.
Boo.
And last but not least.
Yeah, I hope you weren't going to go out on that one.
No, I saved one in reserve just in case you didn't like that one. Alf Afterkembi. Afterkemba means combed back. This is the nephew-in-law of Earl Hawken. Finnbogi, you might remember, kills him and then marries his daughter, which is, you know, pretty impressive. So let's get this out of the way right off. This nickname is exactly what it sounds like. Alf's got a kickin' mullet. He's all business in the front, all party in the rear. How odd-looking this is depends on what you think he looks like. The actual name suggests a sort of swept-back hairstyle like you'd see on an 80s rock band. Or maybe he's got more of what my father was fond of calling a DA hairstyle. Duck's ass, right? The look that 50s punks got by using pomade to comb their hair back on both sides. Right? That, the Fonz look. Whatever else got happening, he's definitely making a show of himself and his hair, because it apparently stands out enough to be his defining characteristic.
Okay. What 80s bands are you referring to with the, because I'm thinking more of 80s teases. They like to tease and feather hair. Not so much a swept back look.
Oh, no. Like the Hall & Oates look that you're so fond of citing. Or the or the Richard Marx look.
Okay, Richard
Marx. You know,
Marx.
that kind of swept back
look.
Gotcha,
okay. Yeah. Not a John Bon Jovi.
No. That's
very, very different. Okay. Now, if Alf had a John Bon Jovi, I would think that would be very cool. But he's more of a
that's a different nickname.
A modern John Bon Jovi who does have a swept back hair look.
Are you just stalling, or do you really not know?
Well,
what
no,
you're going
you
to
know,
pick?
I have two things that I really like there. I liked Urlacot, even though I don't like the name. I don't like saying the name. I think it's a weird name. I think that one's a really, really good one, and I can't remember the other one. Can you give me the other, what are the other ones real quick?
Osbjorn Detius, Urthercott, Finnbogi the Mighty, Thorvald Mothskeggi, Dream Finny, Thorbjorn Sledgehammer, Berg the Bold, Alf Afterkemba.
I also like Mothskeggi, not because I like the guy, but his name is interesting. And only because it helps me understand the origins of the word mud. I liked looking that up and learning a little bit about it. So for me, it's between Urthacott and Mothskeggi, though I think you might want Afterkembi. It's quite possible.
Well, I think for me, I'm a big fan of Berg the Bold. I'm quite proud of myself for courageous. No. But if we're not going to give it to Berg the Bold / Berg the Dog, I can see Urthacott. I think that's an interesting name. I think it's got... as I said, I think it's got some really interesting connotations with that idea that exposed children, exposed babies, are kind of clawing at their surroundings and trying to survive. And it's got that kind of, you know, scratching cat sound to it. I don't mind the name. I actually kind of like saying it, Urthacott. but that's the one we both like, so let's,
all right,
let's go
Ur
with
the
that.
Cult, it is. Despite all my whining and complaining about it, there it is as the winner of Best Nickname of Finnbogi Saga.
Notable witticisms.
Now, you know, I'm actually shocked that a saga with such a colorful character as Finnbogi is supposed to be doesn't have more witticisms in it.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah, I've only got two candidates out of this whole thing, and one of them is authorial rather than spoken by one of the characters.
Mm-hmm. I also have two.
Do you? Yeah. So we get Finnbogi telling people that they'll never kill a bear the way he did, but I don't find that particularly witty, and it gets kind of old after a while.
Right.
But I do have two options. Neither one of them is a witticism in the traditional vein of notable witticisms uttered by a character to reveal his cleverness.
But you are really not selling this.
But I like these two, so we're gonna run them.
Well, what do you got?
All right. I'll start with Finnbogi's response to Emperor John's question: "In whom do you believe?" Now, Finnbogi's reply is both simple and honest. He says, "I believe in myself."
That's not a witticism. That's an affirmation.
It is, right? Yeah. But, I had to pick two things, so this is what I came up with, all right?
Icelandic saga self-help. I believe in myself, and gosh darn it, people like me in the Westfjords.
Now, I'm not entirely sure how we're supposed to read all of that, but I'd like to think that this bit of Finnbogi's brashness represents the spirit of Icelandic independence, mm-hmm. and that's something I could admire, and I think it's a great response that captures nicely one of the qualities I most enjoy about the character of medieval Iceland.
Yeah, it's worth noting that this is actually a motif that we see very often in the fodder, right? An mm-hmm. Icelander giving kind of terse and slightly sarcastic answers to a questioning king or lord from another land.
Right.
And it's very much a kind of, it shows that Icelanders are not cowed in the presence of royalty abroad.
Moo. So what's your first candidate?
My first candidate is actually a little bit earlier in the saga. And this is when Finnbogi, speaking of him being questioned by royals abroad, this is him entering the presence of Earl Hawken and being questioned about why he's traveling alone. When he had been in the company of the Earl's nephew-in-law.
Yes, that's right. I remember this one.
So this is... he does, in fact, begin, and I'll start at Earl Hawken saying, "Did you kill the bear?" And he said that he had. "How did you do it without any weapons?" asked the Earl. "That doesn't matter to you. You won't kill another bear that way." "With whom did you travel from the north?" asked the Earl. "Well, I came from the north with your relative, Alf Afterkemba," Finnbogi replied. "Where did you two part?" asked the Earl. "He remained behind on an island." "Why did he do that?" "Well, I killed him."
I just like the long, drawn-out nature of that conversation.
And you can see the Earl kind of circling around the question he really wants to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, of course, the question then becomes why Finnbogi would have killed him in the first place, but we already know the reasons for that, so we won't go into it. Again, not a terribly witty line, but indicating that Finnbogi is not to be cowed by anyone.
Moo. Ving on.
Oh, jeez.
My second option comes from the scene that you described in our Endless Best Bloodshed section, where Finnbogi's wrestling with Thorbjorn's sledgehammer. Now, I'm not going to review the whole episode, but the basics are that Finnbogi hired Thorbjorn the Outlaw to do some mowing and some haymaking. There aren't any terribly witty exchanges between the two, which is tragic, but the author of the saga really shows his wit in this scene. So I'm just going to read the sequence that I have in mind, and you tell me whether or not this is one of the wittier things that we've read in a while. All right?
All right.
It says, "Thorbjorn then began to struggle so violently that Finnbogi believed he would manage to escape from under him, and no weapon was available. Finnbogi was not willing to let him up, and so he twisted the tail of his cloak around Thorbjorn's throat and bit through it, then snapped his neck back, breaking his neck. With such a rough treatment, Thorbjorn quieted down considerably. Now, Finnbogi then searched for the knife he had around his neck and was able to kill him with that. So Thorbjorn had both done great work and received a great wage for his mowing." A winky winky. Now, I mean, that's a clever bit of description there.
It is. It's very clever. I think the narrator of this saga reserves most of the best lines for himself.
Yes, he does. I mean, you would think that Finnbogi could say that to him.
Right.
There's the wage for your hard work or something right. like that. And that would be notable witticism.
Absolutely.
But no, the author's keeping it for himself. What's your final candidate for notable witticism?
So, like that one, this last one for me is a combination of a one-liner and a bit of narrative playfulness from our author.
Uh-huh.
So, now we're toward the end of the saga, and Finnbogi is alone and caught in a standoff with a powerful man named Brand Vermunderson and his 25 followers over an outlaw that Finnbogi's harboring. We sort of skipped by this episode in the summary. So
yeah.
It's nice that we're having some time with it here.
But it's a brilliant one, and you should take your time to read it if you can.
Yeah. So Finnbogi's got the high ground, and he calls out to Brand. "It's my advice, Brand, that you don't attack me yourself right away. Let your men go first, while my farmhands are able to offer resistance."
"What farmhands are you talking about? I don't see anyone other than the two of you standing there."
"Well, another 6 farmhands of mine are here nonetheless, and they don't lack strength. They are namesakes. For they are all called Stein," meaning stone. "Now send against them an equal number of your farmhands, and let's find out who will make room for whom." Brand replied that he would not lose heart, even if Finnbogi threatened them with stones. It is said that one of Brand's men came forward with a splendid shield and spear, and ran up toward Finnbogi and the namesakes, intending to thrust at Finnbogi. Finnbogi seized a stone. The man was strong and intended to ward off the blow with his shield, but Finnbogi's farmhand was agile and advanced vigorously. Brand's man could not withstand his attack. He fell backwards, tumbled into the ravine, and was killed at once. Finnbogi asked Brand how things had turned out for that one, and he replied that things had not gone well for that man. It is said that Finnbogi sent off his 6 farmhands, and each called a man to account.
Nice.
Finnbogi then asked Brand how he thought it was going, and Brand said that Finnbogi had no reason to find fault.
It's so dry.
It's so great. Funny. It's great. But so Brand sends these 6 men after Finnbogi, and the narrator is picking up that gag, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of the rocks as farmhands.
Yeah.
What I enjoy about this, and by the way, Finnbogi kills 6 men with the stones, lives through the fight, and eventually is reconciled to Brand. But I just enjoy in this scene the way the author takes a bad pun and just runs with it.
Exactly. And I think that is, you know, as much as I like my second one, I think that one's clever enough and it combines just a nice bit of bloodshed there, that it should win this category.
I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So all right. Stein, 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 and Stein, come forward and collect your reward.
Outlawry.
Okay, so in this category, now we have to choose one character from this saga to outlaw forever.
That's right.
I think we've got a couple of choices, but I do not think this is a category with a lot of options.
Well, not only does it not have a lot of options, it has one very, 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 very obvious candidate.
Oh, I think it's got at least 2 and possibly 3 very obvious candidates.
Oh, stuff your extra 2. You know who's going home.
Or well, now, wait a minute.
Leaving home, I guess, would be the
way
to put it.
Wait a minute. I think I know who you're aiming for here, but before we get to him, I assume you're talking about Jokel. Before we get to Jokel, we need to at least talk about the child murderer, Thorvald Mofskegi.
Oh, yes. Well, you know...
He's pretty awful. I mean, I realize that there was some provocation there. Mm-hmm. Finnbogi's kids were being obnoxious, but that is hardly a reason to murder 2 small children.
And you know what? I have a feeling listeners are going to be very disappointed in us if we don't outlaw him for that reason.
I would think so. I think that's a very serious problem.
You know, that is a big issue. All right. I have him under consideration now.
All right.
I'm seriously considering him.
Now, there is, of course, there is Alf Afterkemba, right, who attempts to murder Finnbogi on the island. Okay. But
now,
yeah,
that's a minor... I don't want to say that some attempted murder is a minor offense, but
that's only attempted murder.
But in sagas, yeah. You know, that does seem like a minor offense. Also, I would point out that he's a citizen not of Iceland, but of Norway.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was about to say. But he's not a citizen of Iceland. So that's not on the table.
It's not good. And speaking of which, and we should address this, one of our listeners, Ingrid, mentioned on Facebook that we outlawed Freydis, Eric's daughter, in Greenlander Saga for killing all those people. And she points out that Freydis committed crimes outside of Iceland and is not, in fact, really an Icelander. So how does that fit into our rule system of outlawry? We've talked before about not outlawing people in Norway.
Well, no, we had a conversation. I don't know if you remember this now. We had a conversation before Greenlander Saga about whether or not we could outlaw Freydis. And we essentially, and I admit that this was somewhat specious reasoning based mainly on the fact that there were no other options. Given that, remember, we had already outlawed Eric in Eric's saga, so he was no longer an option.
Refresh my memory, but are there any Icelanders actually that's the problem. In Iceland in Greenlander saga?
Well, so what we have, the only people, apart from someone like Thorfinn Karlsefni, who is an Icelander but not in Iceland during the saga, Eric and his children are the only ones that we sort of have from Iceland.
Well, you know, I think everyone understands that. I think the issue is that these were not crimes committed in Iceland.
Right. But so we're I consider that given the dearth of other options, that at least she is an Icelander. She's guilty of murdering other people, some of them Icelanders, some of them Greenlanders. That's about the best we were going to get in that saga.
That's about all we got in that saga. So rather than dwell too long on Freydis, let's think about our good buddy Jokul. I mean, think about all of the things that he does. I understand that that Molfskeg is a good candidate and he commits a really horrible act. But in terms of the kind of guy you don't want to have around in Iceland, Molfskeg was keeping to himself for the most part. And Jokul is an active agitator in his district. And not only does he actively agitate within his district, once Finnbogi moves, he continues to send outlaws out to kill Finnbogi. I mean, this is a guy with a...
Over and over again. I mean, just single-handedly disrupting the peace of the district. I mean, for a span of years.
Yeah, exactly. And for the kinds of ambushes, it's not like he even comes out in a straight attack. It's just ambush after ambush, pitting huge numbers against small numbers.
And by the way, wouldn't you think that after four or five ambushes, you'd tell your men to keep their spear points down low where they can't be seen from a distance?
Right, right. Prophet has a keen eyesight. He's always spotting those things.
No, I think Jokul is absolutely, in this saga, right? And again, in Vatnsdala saga, we considered him as a possible thingman. Neither one of us took him. But in this saga, his character, his nature is, he's a disruptor. He's a villain. He's a coward. I mean, sort of, you know, not personally, but in the way that he chooses to conduct his attacks and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
He's dishonest. He's the antithesis of everything that Finnbogi is in this saga. And so I think we have to strongly consider him. Now, I would point out, we have once before outlawed two people from the same saga.
Is that right?
That's right.
Did we have a tie?
Yes. Yes, we did. In fact, it was the saga of Gunnlaug Serpentongue. We outlawed both Gunnlaug and Hrafn the Poet.
That's right. Yeah, but they kind of deserved it together.
Understood.
It's not fair to take two separate outlaws. That kind of goes against our whole system.
I'm just letting you know that's a possibility. Because here's what I'm going
to say. In that particular case, they were bound at the hip, those two. They needed to have a timeout together.
Fair enough.
Work their problems out.
So what I'm going to say is, Jokul is guilty of many, many crimes.
Yes.
Many crimes. I think we could absolutely be justified in eliminating him and in outlawing him. Child murder?
Yeah. You know, when you put it that way,
It's pretty bad. I mean, Thorvald, he isn't around in the saga for as long, but he kills two children.
And the way that he does it
is
enough to... I really didn't think this was going to happen, but you have made a fairly convincing case and reminded me of one of the great horrors of the sagas that we've covered so far. I'm going to advocate for outlawing Molfskeg over Jokul. I can't believe I just said that.
There you go. I agree. I think it's a little strange, but I think if we're just looking at the depth of villainry, rather than the breadth of villainry, It's hard to outdo a man who dashes little boys against rocks.
It sure is.
Thorvald has got to go.
Which means that Jokul is now available to be chosen for Thingman.
Well, don't tip your hand just yet. All right, Thorvald, get on the boat.
Thingman.
Now, as much as we might like the other categories, The reality of the situation is that it's all about the Thingmen.
Mm-hmm. I know you feel that way.
Who do we get to bring into our little group of Thingmen that we get to boss around and tell them what to do? John, you won the coin toss this time. Have you decided to defer, or are you choosing first?
No, I'm going to go right ahead.
Oh, going right ahead. All right. So that means when we do Rekdala Saga, I get to choose first.
That's correct.
Very interesting. All right. Well, I'm curious who you're going to pick here, because there's some interesting choices.
All right. Well, okay. So in honor of the indomitable Hrothin, I'm going to keep this short. I am indeed picking first this time due to the coin flip gods. So since I'm going first, let me just quickly run through what I think of as the list of candidates for Thingmen. First, and most obviously, there's Finnbogi, who's practically a demigod in this saga. Then there's his faithful companion, Hrothin the Short, a good man in a fight, and I think a clever fellow. There's Finnbogi's son, Gunnbjorn, who has a few adventures and a fair claim to being a formidable man in his own right.
Please choose Hrothin.
And of course, there's the Vatnsdal men. Not Jokul, obviously, since he's only just barely avoided boarding an exile ship bound for rocky shores. Consider the fact that we nearly chose him over a child murderer. He's pretty bad in this saga.
Right.
But his brothers Thorstein and Thor Ingemundersen are still here and are not bad. I took their father in Vatnsdala Saga, and it might be nice to have a little father and son reunion. So those are my candidates. Now, I'm not going to take Hrothin, I'm sorry. I value his loyalty, his willingness to put everything on the line for a friend, and his keen eyesight, but he's clearly a second banana in this story.
A little too diminutive for your taste, huh?
Also, well, no, that's fine. I'm not terribly interested in Gunnbjorn Finnbogason, essentially because I don't think we ever get enough information about him to flesh out his character fully.
Right.
In a lot of ways, he reminds me of Aelis Skallagrimson's son, Thorstein, who we'll meet in Aels Saga, who has a similarly kind of underwhelming character arc. Thorir Ingemundersen, I think, isn't important enough in this saga to be taken, even though I like him a lot. I regret not having another shot at him, but I just don't think he has enough of a role in this saga. So I'm kind of tempted by both Finnbogi and Thorstein Ingemundersen. Thorstein would be great fun. He and Ingemann could sit in my mead hall and sing The Cat's in the Cradle while everyone else weeps into their ale mugs. But I can't do it. As much as Thorstein was a strong choice in Vatnsdala Saga, this isn't his show. I've got to take Finnbogi. It's not just that he's the main and eponymous figure in the saga. It's if we're choosing our Thingmen based on their persona in the saga we choose them from, then this is no contest.
Yeah.
Finnbogi is an incredible figure. A demon wrestling, troll fighting, rock throwing ubermensch without the dark side that so many saga heroes are saddled with. He's a warrior hero of a kind that not every saga offers up. This saga may be revisionist propaganda, but the result of that propaganda is a man I can't resist giving a seat at my table.
Well, that's interesting, because I seem to remember during our quarter court, you deriding me for having characters who were the titular characters of the sagas, saying that I was grasping at fame. But, you take your Finnbogi, you enjoy him. I'm not bitter.
You aren't at all bitter, are you?
No.
Did you really think that you were going to steal Finnbogi as a second choice?
No, I didn't. I held out hope that you were going to choose Thorstein, but I would have made fun of you for choosing someone who's barely in the saga. So you couldn't win either way, nor could I. Okay, so that leaves one candidate, and I can't believe that you didn't go over this guy because he's the only other candidate that's legitimate in the whole story. I'm talking, of course, about Finnbogi's uncle, Thorgeir.
Oh, okay, yeah.
As far as what you're looking for in a Thingman, you're looking for one of two things. Either you're looking for a man who is a warrior, like Finnbogi, who can go out and do tasks for you, if you will. Or you're looking for a counselor. That's part of why you chose Snorri Goði. Clearly, Snorri Goði isn't someone going out there and winning battles for you. But he helps you plan, and he also gives you good advice. And Thorgeir, throughout this whole saga, is a sage counselor, and he gives the best advice. He also has a lot of great influence. We're going to see Thorgeir again in Ljósvetninga saga, and we also are going to run into him, I believe, in Njál saga and a couple others when we get to discussions of the conversion to Christianity. Thorgeir is a major figure in Iceland, and while I agree that Finnbogi is an awesome warrior, I think I feel a little bit better. I feel a little bit less dirty because I've got I've got a real Icelander here. I've got a man who has significant political influence and also a great head on his shoulders. I would have probably chosen Finn Bogey, to be honest.
Oh, I'm sure you would have.
I think I'm happier with Thorgeir.
Mm-hmm. So. I think Thorgeir is a great choice. I mean, you know, I won't lie. I mean, one of the reasons that he wasn't on my list is because I wasn't going to pick him, and I was hoping he'd slip through and would grab him in a different saga.
Ha!
So I don't think he's a bad choice at all. I personally think that giving up a second chance at Thorstein Ingemundersen is tough.
You know what? I don't believe that because I don't think that Thorstein's in the saga enough. We had a conversation before all of this where I said, right, I don't think he's a legit candidate, but I was willing to let you do it just so I might get Finn Bogey.
So you could get Finn Bogey, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that ploy didn't work out, and I lost Finn Bogey, but I got Thorgeir. And
I think we've both got good Thingmen this time around. Yeah,
I think so, too. So we'll see what happens in Rekdal Saga.
Final rating.
And here we are at last at the end. It's time for each of us to just offer a few last words and give our rating of the saga on a scale of 1 to 10. And Andy, I think you've got the honors this time.
I do. You know, and I'm really eager to find out what your thoughts on it are, but I got the honor, so I'll go first. Now, I've done a lot of thinking about this saga after reading it 4 or 5 times for this podcast. And yes, that's about how many times we have to read one of these things. So if we're a little scared of doing Ale or Njal this summer, that's why.
Speaking of which, you can still vote. The poll is up and running, and it is a tight race at the moment.
That's right. I'll post it up again real soon. Now, Finn Bogey Saga is one that I hadn't read before, and as we went through it, I found myself liking it more and more. It's just a fun saga to read. But then, sitting down to think about the final rating, as I do, I started to wonder if I was just enjoying the saga for the sake of its great storytelling. Now, we said in the first summary episode that Finn Bogey Saga is an underappreciated and little-studied text, and you know what? It's not hard to see why. There simply isn't much to this saga for a scholar to sink his teeth into.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, there's the parallel with Vatnsdal Saga, but that's been covered kind of poorly, but it's been covered, and it doesn't offer any real interesting insights for me. And as much as I enjoy the narrative and storytelling of the saga, its folktale tone, especially in the first half, ultimately limits the saga's potential value for a guy like me who wants a bit more social commentary in his literature. I mean, Finn Bogey's a great character. He's perfect in almost every way, at least insofar as this narrative asks him to be. And that's just it. Finn Bogey's never really tested in this saga.
Mm-hmm.
The world he inhabits is conveniently his for the taking. And so that makes him a less interesting character in the saga, a less interesting read. But then, I also have to consider the fact that despite his abundant physical gifts and general perfection, he does lead a troubled life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if Finn Bogey is free to go wherever and do whatever he wants. It's actually quite the opposite. Much like Grettir, Finn Bogey appears to be the victim of his own prowess and his own abilities. No matter where he goes, Finn Bogey's forced out due to the inevitable realization by local factions that he simply can't be beat. Mm-hmm. And along the way, he loses nearly everything that he holds dear. So, you know, Finn Bogey's not a flat character in a flat narrative. He does evolve in some ways. And
yes,
and this saga isn't entirely bound by that folk tonality of the first half. Finn Bogey in Iceland may not be as complex as we might want him to be, but he does show signs of that depth. And much like Grettir's saga, Finn Bogey's saga feels like a saga that's coming to terms with a new world, only I think that this one offers a reverse perspective. Whereas Grettir's a pagan hero trapped in a gentler age, Finn Bogey's a forthright and upstanding hero trapped in an age of suspicion and aggression. He'd be happy, I think, to let everyone live in peace, but he's not given that opportunity by the people that live around him. Instead, he's viewed as a threat.
I gotta say, this is a delightful encomium about my new Thingmen. Please go on.
Please shut up. He's viewed as a threat by nearly everyone and treated with hostility. And he needs a man like Thorgeir to guide him through all of that.
Oh, see what happened there?
I just added that in. I just added it right in.
I know you did.
Just for you. No, what's really remarkable, now I don't want to read this now that you have him as... but I'll say it. What's really remarkable is that Finn Bogey tends to deal with all of this adversity in the manner of a good Christian hero, fitting of the new age in all the ways that Grettir is going to fail. And in that regard, I think that this saga has more to offer than I thought when I first sat down to compose this final rating. I was thinking about giving it a 6 for being fun, but too simplistic. But now after thinking really carefully about it, I've talked myself into thinking that the saga is probably smarter than it may actually be. So I'll stop before I convince myself of something new. And the fact that you took Finn Bogey makes me want to dock at some points, but
you are a bitter, bitter man.
Always, always. I'm giving it a strong 7.
Hmm. All right.
So what did you give it? Now it's your turn.
Okay. So I'm going to try to keep this brief in part because I think you just said a lot of what needs to be said. I'm actually going to now forget about all the Christian stuff I was going to talk about.
Oh, interesting.
I'm going to just go right to what was originally going to be my conclusion. There are some weird things happening in this saga. It does read like a revisionist text, as we've talked about. And at times it seems to abandon historical memory in favor of shoehorning in various tropes that help to turn Yokel, for example, into almost a parody of a saga villain, and Finn Bogey into a borderline unbelievable hero.
Mm-hmm.
Literally unbelievable, as in, I don't quite believe it. And it's a shame that that's the case, because those well-worn and almost hackneyed story elements get in the way of what I think is the best and the worst of this saga, which is its willingness to blend and bend genres.
Mm.
It's a legendary saga that evolves into a standard Icelanders saga.
Yes, that's good.
Thought of another way, it's an Icelanders saga with a dangerously casual attitude toward plausibility, and a healthy dose of reality-based xenophobia. I mean, when we're in Iceland, everything's okay. We have to accept that Finn Bogey's a walking specimen of perfection who's been maligned in other texts, but okay. But once we're outside the island, we've got demonic troll men, unrealistically friendly Byzantine emperors, bears that swim competitively, bears that understand human speech and are possibly vampiric, and so on. It's not just the saga's got supernatural weirdness. I mean, as we know, Erebidge is one of my favorite sagas, and that's got Ghost Seal, Whack-A-Mole, and Undead Squatters.
Can't beat that.
You can't beat it. My problem is that the weirdness doesn't seem to be in service of anything significant.
That's the problem. I agree.
In most sagas, I can trace the assertion of the supernatural to some narrative tension of the text. The conversion is often a factor, but the evolution of funereal practices, the workings of word or fate, the incursions of the worlds of the gods into those of men, or even just the power and danger of magical forces in the world. I'm not sure what purpose the weird episodes in Finn Bogey's saga serve, except to establish that the world outside of Iceland is a strange place where fairy tales happen and bears can talk. As a reader, I'm not convinced that the world this saga creates is meant to be understood as real, even to its writer and audience. And ultimately, the saga is no deeper or more interesting because of those stories.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did say that this genre bending is also the saga's strength. There's an undeniable tendency toward what we'll call a conventionality in a great deal of saga literature. Jesse Byock has usefully created the mimetic Fudim description of saga story arcs, right, as an explanation of this.
Right.
That sagas can actually be organized according to a series of memes, for people who are familiar with that term, and you can understand each sort of saga feud arc according to these memes. Without getting into the whole book prosis, free prosis thing, which we covered back in episode 1, I will say that Finn Bogey offers a refreshing change, at least in its early chapters, from the expected narrative. If it becomes entirely conventional once it returns to Iceland, well, that may simply suggest a writer for whom Iceland and its literature was a known commodity. While Finn Bogey's on his travels, however, the author's sending him into fantastical versions of the known world, a kind of Here Be Dragons map of the world, but without an obvious move into fantasy. Ultimately, that makes for an interesting text, but a somewhat schizophrenic reading experience. So I'm giving this a 5 as a saga.
Whoa!
Either the beginning or the end is a great read, but I'm not sure which half to recommend. So 5 for the half I like, as soon as I figure out which half that is.
Now, out of curiosity, and I know we're going to try to wrap this up, but just answer me this question really quickly. You gave Vatnsdal's saga a 7, and Vatnsdal's saga has a very similar structure. It starts out in the fairy tale realm, and it moves towards a kind of more standard Icelandic saga narrative, much more realistic. I think Finnbogi's saga does something quite similar. So why are you rewarding Vatnsdal's saga, which is one of, you know, it's not one of the stronger ones that we've read, and yet you're punishing Finn Bogey so cruelly with a 5, which is not that bad.
I was going to say, I think it's mischaracterizing to say that I'm punishing Finn Bogey.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that Vatnsdal, the elements hang together more clearly. Maybe it's just because the story starts in Norway
and moves to Iceland.
Yeah.
That it fits into the kind of settlement narrative that that story is concerned with.
Mm-hmm.
That you sort of begin in not just Norway, but that kind of fantastical Norway where trolls and giants walk the earth.
Sure. Finnbogi is a more condensed version of that same process.
Well, but you have this slow process where the characters begin in a kind of fantastical Norway, move through the generations into a much more historically grounded Norway, and then from there move into Iceland. But I feel that while that saga has a much clearer sort of linear arc, bringing us from fantasy into reality and across to Iceland as part of the story of settlement, Finnbogi starts with him as an Icelander and then moves from there into this bizarre set of voyages abroad and then brings him back to Iceland. And there doesn't seem to be any sort of narrative purpose to those episodes.
Well, they establish his fame and his reputation. So, you know, that's important. It also gives him the wealth that he comes back with.
Very now, well. Thus the five points that I gave it for what happens after he gets back.
You know, I would also say that, you know, in Vatnsdal's saga, one of our main complaints was its episodic nature and its general mm-hmm. kind of, it doesn't read terribly well. Now, yes. Finnbogi saga, I think, and I'm just curious how you feel about this, Finnbogi saga reads really, really well. This is the kind of story that, you know, give or take a few parts, you can read out loud to your friends and family, if you have that kind of friends and family.
And if not, go get some.
So what do you think? What do you think? Isn't Finnbogi a very readable, fun saga?
But you are just... Is this the first time that you've ever sort of expected me to give it a higher rating than I did? Or are you just upset that I gave it a lower rating than you did?
I think what you need to do is change your rating to 6, and I'll be happy.
Nope.
5.5? Nope.
I'm very content with my 5.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, that wraps us up. I would continue arguing with John, but I have a feeling that everyone would like me to stop. So.
Well, we can carry on arguing. We're just going to stop recording this episode.
But, you know, in the meantime, if you're interested and you want to share your reaction with us and see who you agree with more, John or Andy, go ahead and contact us via Facebook at Saga Thing Podcast or on Twitter, Saga Thing Pod. And you can also email us at sagathingpodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Remember to send your pictures of you in front of statues or monuments or whatever awesome things you find that are saga related. You have anything to add, John?
No, I do not.
As usual, John's going to be quiet. So I'm going to say, thanks for listening.
Bye for now.
You know what? John and I have been talking, and after further reflection, I think I'm going to lower my score to a 6. I think that's much more appropriate.
After he came at me, guns a-blazing about my judgment. Yeah, we did continue arguing for, I don't know how long, another 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And the end result of that is I've judo chopped him into submission.
Not exactly, but I reviewed other scores that we've given, and I don't feel comfortable placing Finnbogi above certain other sagas. So, 6 from
now,
me.
Personally, I think, you know, when a man makes a judgment about a saga, he needs to stand behind that judgment. But I understand. I understand. You feel the need to clean that up a little bit.
Sometimes I get excited, and then you know, the mood takes me, and I score things a little high, a little low. But you know, I feel much more comfortable with 6 upon reflection.
Excellent.
Ask me again tomorrow.
By tomorrow, it'll be a 4, and you'll be yelling at me for being too generous.
That's right. All right. Bye for now.
Since when do you listen while I read nicknames anyway?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to be better.